You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
I want to tell you my secret now. I see dead people.
Silent Green is people!
She's my sister and my daughter!
Rosebud.
What's in the box?
And like that, he's gone.
Hello, and welcome to another Slate spoiler special. I'm Willa Paskin, Slate's TV critic, and this week we're going to be spoiling the latest season of Black Mirror. Here to talk with me about the television show is our Technicolor writer, Ingu Kang. Hi, Ingu.
Hi.
And also joining me is Slate Browbeat editor, Sam Adams. Hi.
Hello.
So Black Mirror is a tech dystopia series created by Charlie Brooker, where every episode is self-contained with a distinct story, plot, cast, and I would say level of quality. This show's fourth season and its second on Netflix just arrived on the streaming service just before the new year, and we're going to spoil all of it. I thought that we would basically hit on every episode and then see if there's anything we haven't touched on at the very end. I think we're going to start with an episode that I thought was one of the worst episodes. We're going to get to Callister, but I thought we would just make you all listen to another one before we get to the episode that's actually really good. So I thought we would start with Archangel, which is directed by Jodie Foster, who is the first woman who has ever directed an episode of Black Mirror, something to just know.
To note, yeah.
So someone, one of you want to say what happens in that episode?
Well, this is sort of a classic, you can't discuss Black Mirror at this point in the 21st century without kind of referencing Mallory Ortberg's kind of classic characterization of the show as what if phones, but too much. And this is, you know, Archangel is a what if phones, but too much episode. It's basically about a mother who decides to put an implant in her child's head that lets her kind of, you know, see what her child sees, hear what her child hears, and ultimately kind of control both those things as well. Like, it allows her to basically kind of put a content blocker on her kid's sensory nervous system. Wouldn't you know it, this ends up being kind of a mixed blessing. It's sort of the, you know, a video baby monitor squared or cubed, and things go badly.
See, this is actually what you just said is what my main issue with this episode was, like, beyond it sort of being predictable and a drag, is that I just did not believe that anyone would do this. Like, they sort of create, they give you the sense that the character plays by Rosemary DeWitt, who's the girl's mother, is like very isolated. She's a single mother. She's raising her daughter with her father, who sort of dies halfway through the episode. But it's just like, this is a terrible idea. The show knows it's such a bad idea that in passing in the episode, it mentions that, like, this technology was, like, outlawed in Europe and has been discontinued because it's such a terrible idea. And I'm not saying that people wouldn't, like, want to put LoJacks on their kids, because I'm sure that they would.
I mean, they do.
They do, yeah. So. But this thing where you're, like, literally turning your kid's brain on and off, like, I just think she would have thought about it more. Like, I just didn't buy that. There's just something about this whole season that made me feel like people are not as skeptical and worried about technology as, like, we actually all are, even as we let technology into every single aspect of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, well,
the people in Black Mirror are not watching Black Mirror. I mean, that's the problem, right?
Well, I mean, that's definitely true. But I think even without Black Mirror, people would be a little bit like, what is all this stuff doing to our brains? I mean, Black Mirror didn't create that anxiety. It has capitalized on it and sort of, you know, exacerbated it and given us a word to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, a point you made in your review of the season is that, like, it's just, doesn't anybody in the world of Black Mirror ever try to put their phone down? Like, you know, we all wrestle with this stuff, like, so much all the time. And of course, we're all, like, addicted to technology, but we also are aware that we're addicted to it and we struggle with it. And it just seems like the characters in Black Mirror so often just, you kind of see a shiny new bauble and jump right at it.
Right. And I mean, there are those people. So maybe they're just, like, always the early adopters who are unthinking about it.
Yeah.
I did think the thing about Archangel that was too bad is that I thought there was, like, a little bit of a good thing in it, which I thought it's insight into actually how teens misbehave, but it's really okay. And it's for the best that your parents don't know about, like,
yes,
the experimentation you do because you're really fine was like very right on. Like all the stuff that the mom sees her daughter doing, which is like having sex and sort of doing drugs. And she doesn't have the context that like the guy she's doing this with is actually sort of like basically a nice guy. And he's sort of weirded out by how provocative the girl is being and sort of like, and she's just really play acting. All that stuff was like very nuanced in their relationship. But obviously their mom's just seeing all this terrible, like the worst version of it and freaking out. And thank God your parents can't see you at your worst moments because they really wouldn't get it.
Right. I mean, as the future parent of a teenage girl, I mean, this is definitely something that is kind of in my mind. And I think back to like the stuff that I did as a teenager that it's very good my parents don't know about. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the better parts of the episode. And I think it's, you know, for what it's worth, like this is Jodie Foster directed it really well. I really like Rosemary DeWitt's performance as the mom and less of it, Brenna Harding as her daughter as well. Like, I think it's just really well accomplished, but the ideas behind it are just very kind of thin and...
Yeah, just like the actual end beat where it's like she basically beats her mother because she's doesn't understand because she has like no feelings about doing bad because she's been content blocked forever.
Yes. Well, yes. Yeah, so yeah, she's never had an experience of violence, so she doesn't really know what it is. And then the mom, you know, the ironic ending is that by trying to keep her child, holding her child too closely, the mom loses her kid perhaps forever, you know.
It was pretty lame.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else to add, Ingo, about that one?
No, you guys covered it.
Okay. All right. So let's move on then to USS Callister, which I think... You know, Charlie Brooker, in a piece I read, an interview with the Times, he predicted that this was going to be the San Junipero of this season. And I think he was correct. This is, I think, the most liked and it's certainly like the most fun episode. I certainly liked it the most. Ingrid, do you want to do a little plot recaplet for us?
So basically, you have this Star Trek, 60s Star Trek-esque world that opens... opens the episode with, and essentially what you eventually discover is that it is this like weird game mod created by this loser CTO who has this like underdog complex, even though he's like second in command at his game company. And when a new female coder employee comes in, he immediately has a crush on her. And also very significantly, everyone at the company is like, stay away from that guy. And if we started the episode very sympathetic toward how he was this like beta dog in his company, you soon realize that after a bunch of like nonsensical things happen where a simulation of that new employee ends up in his Star Trek-y game mod. Basically, everyone in the game mod turns out to be a version of his coworkers. And are forced to do his bidding and also praise him forever because he is the greatest man who has ever lived. And if they don't praise him, then everything will go to hell. And eventually, the simulation of the coder woman figures out how to escape the game mod, and he is sort of stuck in his like shitty little world. And you think that, oh, like because they've escaped his world, they're super safe now. But then it turns out that the real gamer world also sucks. So basically, there's no good anything.
Oh, it's funny. I actually think the ending was a little more ambiguous than that. And also, I would say that I think one other thing is it's not a version of them. It's literally their consciousnesses. It's people. It's people with like exactly the brain that you and I would have just put into a virtual gaming system. It's not like not people. Like that's what's so horrible about it is he's copied your consciousness that has all the feelings that you have, and then you're just stuck for eternity as his like slave. And then he, at the end, is stuck for eternity in his, you know, in space, basically.
Which, I mean, not to, you know, fact check the thing too much, but I mean, he does it by like replicating their DNA, but somehow that has like also has all of their memories like right up to the instant that he swiped it, which I don't think makes any sense. But
I mean, to just move away from Callister into this question of this technology again, this idea of copying consciousnesses, which has come up in earlier seasons of Black Mirror. It came up particularly in the episode White Christmas, I think it's called.
Yep.
The John Hamm episode where, you know, it's sort of like a version of, it's like the evil version of Alexa, where like you've copied your consciousness to be your own assistant. And then that person is enslaved forever, like doing your bidding, but it's really you. Brooker is really enamored with this idea, I think, because it's such a clean metaphor for the whole show, which is like, we have already enslaved ourselves to technology. We are enslaving each other to technology. This is just like a really extreme version of that. It's sort of so extreme that it's not really connected to reality. So you get caught up in like, how did he actually do this? This doesn't make sense. And also the real thing that we're dealing with is sort of more imperfect copying of our consciousnesses and imperfect machines, not perfect ones.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this episode again last night, right before we're taping this, and I sort of appreciated it more the second time because I was more focused on, you know, kind of the details of it, like the kind of way this, you know, Star Trek-y space fleet world is created. The performances, particularly Kristen Milioti as the coder woman who we were talking about, and Jesse Plemons kind of going back and forth between this real world dork and this very Shatner-esque spaceship captain. But it does, you know, there's a very tidy metaphor about kind of, you know, Gamergate and toxic masculinity here. And I think it's almost too tidy. Like you kind of get it right away, and then the episode plays it out.
I thought that, I mean, there is, certainly this is just like probably written almost directly in response to Gamergate, but right. I thought that the beginning, as Ingu said, where you sort of come in from his point of view, right? Like the first scene is a Star Trek scene where he really seems like a Captain Kirk character who is like, you know, enjoying himself a little too much, but you are sort of right on his side. And then he comes into work and you're like, oh, this poor loser. They're all being so mean to him. He's made it the whole thing work. And like, no one cares about him at all. They're all so rude. And then as it's sort of like these details are meted out where like everyone's sort of warning her that he sucks, but you sort of are still think that they're just being unfair. And then for it to just like flip so completely to him, not just being a loser who's sort of like a creeper, but to literally like kind of an evil, malevolent being who is like, who's also, and I mean, this is also like a good Gamergate joke, I thought, which is like his total aversion to sexuality. Like all the consciousnesses in his mod, like don't have genitalia because of course.
But I didn't believe that though.
I know what you mean. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like if this guy exists, which of course he does, like he is totally, I'm sorry, like raping all of his female coworkers because the point is that he's like an angry control freak. And so it.
And also he was romantically interested in them. Like he was romantically interested in her.
That seems like a kind of, you know, several, like a generation ago caricature of the sort of like Star Trek nerd, you know, where, you know, of course these guys are just obsessed with like Star Trek and they're not really into sex. And like, actually, as we found out where the, you know, the internet gives people like, leave to explore like all of their interest, that in fact they these guys like do have sexualities and sometimes they're pretty fucked up.
Do you think that the leaving it out was because, I mean, I wonder, why do you think that was out? Because I feel like Brooker has never been like, let's not do the more messed up thing.
So sorry to jump ahead for a little bit. There is a segment in the Black Museum episode where a guy who has sort of like a sensory empathy machine thinks that he can use it for sex and ends up using it for sex. So sexual manipulation in this series is not completely absent. But I think that you're right, Willa, in that it doesn't really go all the way with that, which for me at least is kind of a blessing because I think as depressing as the show is, I would be a lot less inclined to watch if it was just like a series of like sexual dystopias.
Yes, totally. And I think Brooker probably for this episode was, I mean, what I admired about this episode also is that I thought it was so effectively like a Star Trek send up and a Star Trek like warm hug. And so Star Trek does not have sex in that way. And so even though it's totally implausible this character wouldn't be raping all these women in his fantasy life, I think it wanted to keep kind of the tone of a Star Trek episode. And so like, and that is really out of the tone of a Star Trek episode. So, I mean, I thought it was interesting because like in the middle of the episode, it's sort of like kind of being really mean to Star Trek. Like you're having to think about all the stuff about Star Trek, like the sort of the dark side of Star Trek. But then it really comes together where like she, you know, Captain Kirk becomes a woman, basically, like Christina Milioti becomes that character. And sort of at the end, as they're trying to like get through the like little shrinking wormhole, it like is just a Star Trek episode. And I did think, you know, the last beat, as you mentioned, is them like seeing another planet, aka another user in this game, and him actually just asking for sex.
Yeah, well,
there's an awareness that's happening, and then being like, we're going off to another planet, and it's true, they'll probably encounter mostly just creepers seeking sex, but it's like, you know, it's infinite people. It is like the galaxy.
I mean, I think this is, I think a lot of people actually spot this cameo on the on their own because the voice is so familiar. But that voice you hear at the end of The Other Gamer is actually Aaron Paul. And it sounds so much like the performance that he gives on BoJack Horseman that I sort of thought there was like a little Netflix interconnectivity there. And that was like, you know, Todd kind of, I don't know, whatever, logging onto infinity there. But
Going back to the lack of genitals on this episode, I mean, as maybe unrealistic as that is, that whole sequence where Jimmy Simpson is sort of like banging against his own like lack was really funny as a sort of like the extreme plasticness of like what he has down there. Like, I like that as like a visual joke. And then also, I think the line, I can't remember it precisely, but Kristen Milioti has a great line about like, you did not take away my pussy or whatever.
Yes. That's the last straw for her. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that, you know, it has this like, I guess like 2018 is maybe going to be like the year where we compare everything to The Handmaid's Tale. But I thought that was like a really great example of like this woman saying like, I need my own fucking bodily autonomy. And so I'm just like, that is like my motivation for getting there, which, you know, I was happy with that.
And they also happy ending. They all get their parts back in the last segment
to just be infinitely conscious, yeah. You know, weird world.
Yep. Although like at the same time, the weird sexlessness of Spacefleet was jarring for me when contrasted with like the weird way that Kristen Milioti's character basically like sex blackmailed herself. Yeah. I think that we were supposed to find that resourceful and clever. And for me, it just like felt really weird because in USS Callister and also in several of these other episodes, we're supposed to care more about the simulation of a person than the actual person.
I agree with you that it's very weird that we're not supposed to care about the real people, but I want to insist that it is not a simulation of the person. Like, that's the thing. I think that's, it is a person. Like, that is at least in the world of the show. Like, it's it is literally if your brain were in a game. So it's like, to treat it like it's lesser than is like what so much of the evil of this, of that, is like what the evil of that episode is, basically.
I totally get that, but it doesn't really work for me because I couldn't suspend my disbelief that like a DNA sample would be used to like transfer someone's consciousness like through a lollipop or whatever. And so for me, that was just like a sticking point to where I did have this barrier toward empathizing with all of the characters.
And one of the drawbacks of the episode for me is I do feel like it kind of punts on that issue a little bit. And maybe it's because they already dealt with it in the White Christmas episode. But I feel like the question of whether or not a digital replica of someone's consciousness is actually has personhood, you know, and whether like the ethics of how you treat them is the same as kind of this like USS Callister just kind of does some hand waving over that.
Although I think that the show, I mean, it comes up also in Black Museum, and the right. show is like, obviously we wouldn't know what to do about this and we wouldn't treat them like, if this were possible, in whatever way it's possible, we would act like these were not us. But what if it's like, it's just an AI question.
Right.
It's just like another way of thinking about AI where instead of imagining it's a machine, it's actually you, but it's like not your physical corporeal being. Right. I mean, just to go back to the idea of her blackmailing herself, I did also like the idea that I think that often you see in sci-fi or sort of in time traveling things, this idea that like if you encountered you, you would get it.
Yeah.
And like that's sort of her first gambit is like, I'm going to contact me and she's going to totally understand and she's going to help us. And then, of course, when the simulation or the alt consciousness contacts her original self is like just tells on her to the bad guy. And then he does, you know, turns one of them into a slavering beast. Do you think we have other things to say about USS Callister, or should we jump on?
Can I just give like a shout out to two of the performances? Michaela Cole is really great. For me, the really standout performance was Jimmy Simpson's, because he is so great at both playing like the grotesque and also he was just like really astounding in that totally dopey storyline about his son being stuck in the game. And the fact that like he was able to make that real for me, I thought was like a real accomplishment on his part.
Yeah, this season is actually pretty rough about small children, I would say.
Yeah.
I've been noticing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So yeah, so let's just like do one in like 10 seconds. Okay, crocodile. Hate.
Aye.
do not think that. So basically it's a long, very grisly, like it's a tale of a woman who committed a crime, I mean, murdered someone, covered it up with someone, and then basically is going to get caught out. And so instead goes on like a heinous murder spree that she ends up murdering small children. And the sort of twist is that a guinea pig saw it.
Yeah, this one just feels like I kind of keep coming back to this idea, but this one kind of feels like one where they lost track of whatever the metaphor was supposed to be, and it just kind of feels like sort of, you know, sadistic and icky, and I'm not really sure that the character played by Andrea Riseborough is actually being punished for like the right thing at the end of it, and it just doesn't feel like this kind of
well, like they had a technology which is like you can your memories can be visualized. And then they had like a storyline and they smashed them together and then gave it like a bizarro twist, but none of it really like was worth it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're done with that one.
Moving on.
All right. Hang the DJ. This I think is maybe like sort of widely the second most popular episode from the season. And I think the thing about Black Mirror is as much as it is dystopian, the episodes that are not really that are not just really hard to watch and the ones that are kind of happy are often the most popular. Certainly that was the case about San Junipero, which was like the only sort of uplifting episode of
in the history of the show at the time, really. I mean, it was kind of shocking to see that as a screener before it even debuted and just be like, wait, was that a Black Mirror with that happy ending?
Yeah.
What happened?
Totally. So Hang the DJ, I think is certainly on a first watching appears to have a happy ending. I think it has some more complicated questions about the bullshit we're willing to do to ourselves because an algorithm says so, that is not quite so happy. Does one of you want to limb the plot?
Sure. This is basically about two, a man and a woman, Amy, played by Georgina Campbell, and Frank, played by Joe Cole, who are involved in what they refer to simply as the system. And it's basically a thing where you kind of carry around in your hand a device that sort of looks like a Nest thermostat. And it's kind of sets you up on dates. It gives you kind of a prescribed amount of time you're going to spend with that person, which can be 20 hours or several years. And then the idea is that the system kind of eventually works, and it's basically kind of you refining the algorithm every time you go on a date or go into a relationship, and then eventually it will match you up with a person. And these two, you know, meet cute. They're both kind of very, you know, charismatic, adorable performances, but they only kind of get put on this one 20-hour date, and then it follows them on their, you know, various relationships with other people, none of which seem quite right.
And some of which last for years, even though it's immediately apparent that they're not right.
Yes. And then it's like, you know, but the system's right. So it must just be testing me by putting me with this horrible person for a year. And then, you know, sort of fast forward, they get put together again. There's a kind of a glitch where they agree not to check their expiration date. And then he can't resist and looks at it, and doing that destabilizes the system and you know, radically decreases the time of their relationship. You know, he kind of comes clean to her, and then they agree to escape the system somehow. And that turns out to be the final test, and what the final twist reveals is actually kind of all an algorithmic simulation. And this is basically just going on, you know, this is basically just the slightly futuristic version of Tinder, and they're just looking at each other across a bar, and this simulation, the whole thing has been a simulation deciding that they're, you know, 99.8% perfect for each other.
And I thought the implication was that they had tried, this had happened 98 times before. Like 98 out of 100 means that they had actually met and broken through this app.
Right, algorithmically, it's like they run that.
That means they were really made for each other.
Yes, so it just ran like that number of iterations of their two characters.
So this is totally, not to miss the point, but in a way that you couldn't get over the tech of Callister. Like, I couldn't get over the tech of Hang the DJ, where I'm just like, I get that this is all like a VR simulation or whatever the tech is. It must be happening in their minds in like an instant, and they're not losing like years of their life to this.
Yeah.
But I was just like, who even pretends to use? Like, I just, what? Like, isn't it years of your life if it's happening to you, even if it's you're not physically aging?
Well, but you're not, like, feeling the simulation. It's just that, like, it's a dramatization of an algorithm.
Well, and then it's just like...
No, what do you mean they're not I thought that they... similarly, it's like their consciousnesses are doing this whole thing.
And I didn't
It just fast for us. Like, it's been... we see that three-year slog with that woman that he doesn't like, and we, like, see all the days. It's just like they'd give it a montage for us because it's too boring and horrible to see. But that for the characters, it actually... All of that feels real. And that's why they're compelled to, like, do so many drastic and crazy things, including, like, escaping the Truman Show, which is sort of what it looked like.
I just, like... I for me, there was nothing in the episode to suggest that, which is, like, why it fell so flat for me. Because the whole episode is premised on rebelling against the algorithm. And then in real life, they're just, like, going along with the algorithm. And so there's just something incredibly deflating about that. And because the real-life counterparts aren't feeling the emotions that they're... simulations are feeling, there's sort of this like lack of emotional investment on like both sides of reality for me.
So you think that that last moment when it sort of like gives like a one up means that like the algorithm was happening without the people, like the people who had paid for the app, like this other thing was happening and it wasn't them. It was just like an algorithm running over and over with their consciousnesses, but they're not aware of it.
Yeah, that was my take. That was my interpretation.
Yeah, this feels like one for me. I mean, this is the first season of it. I might have been a Black Mirror fan for a long time since before it started going on Netflix. And it was this great sort of like cult thing that like your cool friends knew how to download. And then it's, you know, become like a much bigger, you know, more widely known phenomenon. And it's coming out at a much more rapid pace. And this is the season where like that, the kind of pace of that production really starts to show for me. And I feel like, you know, Charlie Brooker is kind of in a bit of a rut, and it feels like there's just a Black Mirror episode ends with a twist. So this one ends with a twist, but the twist in this episode and a couple of the other ones really kind of like destroys everything that came beforehand and really lessens it for me.
Well, this one, firstly, I'm not sure it's the pace. I think it just might be possible that there is a limit to how many awesomely dystopiest things about tech you can do before, like, maybe it should just be a 12-episode series, you know?
Like, I mean, it's kind of what if Black Mirror, but too much.
Right? Like, it's just too many episodes. But this twist actually worked for me because I was annoyed by how, like, cute it was. So I thought the fact that it actually was, like, a totally fucked up world was... I was like, oh, okay, that actually sort of redeemed this. Because I didn't, as I said, like, I didn't buy anything about the romance. I thought they were, like, cute, but not that cute. And just, like... what was happening, that they would agree to waste all these years of their lives, even though I think you're probably right, Ingu, that the actual people, it's just like, again, they're some part of their, you know, their consciousnesses are doing it, not them, some fictional, some whatever, some part of themselves. I just like didn't buy that. I thought it was so crazy. So I was actually happy that there was an explanation for their really weird behavior. And that it made it all sort of kind of like sour and messed up.
Yeah, I mean, as an admitted sap, like I kind of liked the romance part of it, but I also am someone who, through the grace of God, has never sort of experienced what seems to me the inestimable horror of online dating. So I think I made, you know, not, you know, viscerally relate to that part of it in the same way.
Do you have anything else to say about that one?
I think that's it.
All right. Nettlehead? I thought this was actually the second most effective episode of the season, but it also had a super lame last minute twist that it just shouldn't have had.
Yep.
Okay. I'll say the plot of this one. So this one is shot all in black and white. It's set in a, you know, near future where something we do not know, but like terrible has happened. And the world seems really terrible and dystopian. We don't know the details. And, like a three humans we see them sort of trying to get into a warehouse to get something where the implication is to help a sick person feel better or like, you know, have less pain in his dying moments. And their encounter basically like a mechanical, it's almost like a dog, and a group of them and this pack of mechanical dogs kills two of them, and then basically there's like a man and machine, man and dog, like face off, but it's a woman and a machine through like the wilderness, and they're basically having like a mano a mano fight, and she ends up in a tree for long periods of time. It's sort of actually kind of quiet and like, oh, it's a one person show. It's like a one person piece. And basically, of course, she seems like she's going to triumph, whatever that means, which means return to her little enclave of humanity, and then ultimately fails and is killed by a pack of metalhead dogs. And then we learn at the very end that the thing they were trying to get at the beginning was a teddy bear. Yes. And that the person they were trying to help was a dying child. And it's so dumb, actually, that it's just so dumb to take that risk. And actually, the only way that I can justify it is in the one episode we haven't talked about, Black Museum. There's an entire storyline about teddy bears that have implanted with consciousnesses. And like, it's torturous. And I was like, unless those are like conscious teddy bears, like unless those were like people in there. That was really, so I'm sort of pretending that that's actually what happened, and it's not just like dumb teddy bears.
To follow up on me being a sap, I kind of liked the twist at the end of this.
Damn.
I know. That you, if only you could see Willa rolling her eyes at me right now. I'll have to put that on Instagram somehow. But no, I mean, I sort of, because the rest of the episode is so bleak. I mean, it's beautiful. It's directed by David Slade, who I mostly know from doing, you know, some of the great episodes of Hannibal. It's in black and white. It's got all these sort of dissonant, like Krzysztof Penderecki compositions laid through it. And it's just basically like, you know, the world is fucked. It's been overrun by these, you know, kind of killer metal dogs, which we never like find out. Somebody had a very bad idea to create them at some point. This is sort of like, basically a kind of late period Terminator scenario where the machines are on the verge of wiping out humanity. And there's this opening conversation about this person who we don't know who it is, and we need to get something to help them. And you think they're getting medicine or something, or just something to kind of, or like an opiate or something to kind of ease their dying agony. And then the idea that it's kind of a teddy bear for a child is, yes, like completely corny, but I like the kind of, you know, it's like one of those like Linda Hamilton speeches about hope in the Terminator trilogy. Like it just has that kind of corny resonance.
Right, except like, failed, stupid hope. Everyone died. They didn't even get the teddy bear.
I mean, the thing is that, like, kids will play with literally anything. So if you gave them, like, a stick and told them it was a teddy bear, they would have gone for it. I don't understand why two people had to die.
Three people. She dies, too.
And they don't even get the bear.
Literally, I mean, everyone we see.
Yeah.
I felt like this was such a waste of Maxine Peake, who I think is an incredibly underrated actress. And I was so excited for her to have this, like, one woman show, and then for it to be this episode, that was sad.
I liked this episode. I mean, I thought the twist didn't actually ruin it. I just thought it was sort of like very taut and sort of like detailed and granular and kind of interesting. Like,
I think it's
just
maybe the shortest episode ever. I mean, it's certainly, you know, because things tend to bloat on Netflix. Yeah. So having like a 40-minute episode of what's usually about an hour show is pretty noteworthy.
Yeah, I thought it sort of worked for me as like her trying to escape from this. From these, you know, creatures, these beasts, these machines.
I think atmospherically, it was really, you know, it was gorgeous and it was very tense. And that car chase at the beginning of the episode, that was really something in terms of filmmaking because of all of the interesting slow-mos and then like the fast cuts that they do. And then I just found it increasingly hard to care. which is maybe like my damage, but I was just like, well, I mean, you could have had two teams and then you basically could have had like a sacrificial team and then a second team could have gone in and like raided that warehouse. And so what is the point of this stupid chase? Like it's when you say like it's like a dog with a bone, like that dog is dumb because it should be focusing on guarding the warehouse.
Yeah. Can I ask, I mean, so we don't end this on too negative a note, because I don't think I'm familiar with Maxine Peake. So can you recommend some like further Maxine Peake watching?
There is a tiny Irish movie that I first saw her in. It's directed by Steph Green and it's called Run and Jump. And it's basically about a woman dealing with her husband having a stroke. and this woman dealing with sort of like the ramifications. It's a very small, quiet movie, and she's just completely emotionally magnetic in it. And also, it stars Will Forte, but that's fine.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, so let's hit the last one, which is Black Museum. Which has sort of the most intricate story structure. I think it really is a companion piece to White Christmas, which has a similar sort of three-in-one story structure with, like, each story leading up to a story for the narrator. And so in this episode, a young Black woman whose car appears to have lost its electricity goes into a rest stop museum that's sort of abandoned, and the kind of overly friendly and a little creepy museum proprietor shows her around, and it's basically like a museum of tech freak show stuff. And as he tells her the story of various devices, like, we see them. So there's an initial story that we mentioned already about a doctor who sort of got implanted to wear this sort of cap that could let him feel what his patients were feeling so he could help diagnose them. And then it skitzed out when he was wearing it when someone died, and he became totally turned on by pain and starts to, want to be around people who are hurt like in pain, and then eventually turns into a, killer, like a freaky. He starts hurting himself, then, goes out and starts putting drills in homeless people's heads while they're wearing these caps so he can feel them die. I mean, really,
as you do,
debased, yeah. Totally. And then we get another episode, and the narrator, so the guy who owns the museum, is like, in my past job at, like, it's actually Junipero Hospitals, which is a shout out to San Junipero. I was like R&D, and I was a salesman for all this terrible shit. And we're clearly like learning he has no values at all. He convinces a woman who was in a vegetative state to have her consciousness implanted in her husband so that she can, like, see her son. But then she, of course, just is, like, in a being John Malkovich way, but like, or Inside Out, but like where the person can actually talk to you, just starts to annoy the shit out of him. And he basically starts to ignore her, and she's just like caught in his brain. And then he puts her in a teddy bear, and then she can only say, like, mommy loves you, or no. And it's just stuck, an actual human brain is just stuck in this teddy bear for eternity. And there's the teddy bear. And then in the third instance, he basically talks about how this episode is also about race in a way that Black Mirror is not usually. And this is called Black Museum, not just because it's like dark, but I think because it's about race. He basically has taken the consciousness of a man who was on death row because the man wanted to provide for his family. And he's essentially like, lets people electrocute this person over and over again. But again, this is like, in the logic of the show, this is actually his consciousness. Like, this is actually a human being with feelings that is being killed again and again and again.
And they can get like little keychain souvenirs of him screaming in pain to take with them.
Where in that keychain, that consciousness is feeling that pain for eternity again and again and again. And then the final sort of reveal is that the woman he's been talking to this whole time is actually the daughter of the prisoner who's being executed over and over again. And she juices up her dad so much that he actually gets to die. And then she does the exact same thing to the proprietor of the museum because she's poisoned him, and she takes his consciousness and puts it eternally in the electric chair on her keychain and rides off.
And burns the place down.
And then her mom is also in her brain.
Yeah.
Like, that was an amazing summary.
Okay. There was a lot of stuff that happened in that episode. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, we can leave it there. That sums it up. Yeah.
It's funny, actually. It's just an interesting thing about Black Mirror, which is true about everything, which is like the tone in which the episodes are embarked upon, no matter what the content is, really does affect how disturbing I find them to be. So like, this actually had a kind of like jocular tone, even as it got more and more creepy. So I found it like less disturbing to watch, even though a lot of the stuff in it is way more disturbing than in other episodes, just because something about it was like a little cartoonish.
I mean, I really, for me, so much of why this episode falls flat, and I think it's, I don't know, maybe tied with Crocodile, but I think this is probably the worst one in this season. Like the central performance, Douglas Hodge as Rollo Haynes, I think is just really lousy. Like he's a British actor doing this very kind of strong, like, you know,
it's like almost like a P.T. Barnum of like. Yeah, creep shows,
and he's doing this like kind of Bob Hoskins in Who Framed Roger Rabbit American accent. Just this really kind of, you know, like nasal, hard bitten thing that I think a lot of times when, like, you know, particularly English actors kind of try to do that, it just takes all the nuance out of their performance because they're so locked into this kind of register that they can't really express anything. It just feels like a really kind of over the top caricature, and just
that was like the whole episode to me was just like. Character. I didn't mind it because I thought it was. I just thought that's what the episode kind of was. Like it was just sort of cartoonish.
Yeah, and I guess I mean like, and the three parts. Like I mean, the last one is kind of clearly the most interesting. Like people have already kind of written about how this ties into this history of kind of, you know, commodifying black suffering in the U.S. But I kind of don't like that. Doesn't seem to have very much to do with the first two parts of it. They're different uses or kind of. Of sort of related technologies, but thematically, like they just don't. It feels like, and actually, the first third is based on a Penn Jillette short story from like 30 years ago called The Pain Addict. So that really is from a different source, but it just doesn't, like it, the whole thing just does not fit together for me.
Yeah, I think that's right. Ingo, other than was there anything?
I mean, I think that there are like, interesting ideas sort of like woven into the margins of this episode. I was really disappointed by all of the storylines, but I kind of like the idea that like our new urban legends basically are these like technological dystopias. And I thought it was interesting that in this episode, and I think in the Archangel mother-daughter, like looking into your daughter's mind episode, there's this idea that like you have these biotech companies who are sort of like going ahead and basically using civilians as experiments, and then government catches up later. And as someone who is looking at tech, you know, like there are aspects of that where I'm like, yep, if this were going to happen, this is exactly how it would happen. And the fact that, you know, these giant corporations, or in this case, like a pharmaceutical company, is preying on people's vulnerabilities in order to get them to consent to becoming like the beta testers of these technologies. I thought all of that was really strong. It's just that like the tiny little stories that make up Black Museum are, I don't know, like you can tell that like they're trying to go for like the gut punch, and just like waiting for that particular gut punch becomes this like really grueling game because you know it's going to come, and they keep trying to punch you as hard as they can, and because you're already expecting it, like it just doesn't land because it always turns out so predictable each time.
I think also just we're gonna maybe this will be a good segue to talking sort of more largely about the season. But as I said when we were talking about Archangel with this episode as well, I felt a little bit like the technology is like it's too advanced in a way that I think doesn't like actually. Has the show jumping over things that would be much more interesting to think about. Like, I keep thinking about the episode, sort of the famous episode, I'll Be Right Back. Is that what it's called, Sam?
Be Right Back.
Be Right Back. With Hayley Atwell and Domhnall Gleeson, that was in one of the early seasons where she loses her partner and she sort of orders a version of him that is animated, not perfectly, but by like all of his electronic correspondence, by his emails and his social media presence. And obviously that person is imperfect. It's not her, like her lover. It's a version of him. And that episode is amazing and is really about how our online selves are not exactly ourselves, even though they're a representation of ourselves or a part of ourselves, but they're not our complete selves. And that seems so much more like in tune with what is hard and strange and bizarre about existing both on the internet and in real life right now. Whereas like an episode like Black Museum sort of suggests, as do so many of the texts in the season, that we actually can be exactly replicated in all of these other locations, like that our consciousness can be just taken and put in all these different places, and it's always us. And that's like, I mean, that might be kind of interesting, or it might, as I said, like talk be the metaphor that Brooker sort of is interested in exploring, but like that's not really what it feels at all like to be dealing with technology right now. And it's like, it's almost like out, it's like gotten ahead of itself. And I wish just go back to something more basic where like there's all this real like gritty, weird stuff to explore.
I think when I was first watching Nosedive last year, I was really disappointed by it. Nosedive is the episode starring Bryce Dallas Howard, where like everything in your life is based on your social media rating. And the fact that like your social media rating is actually not a very good reflection of who you are or the person that you are trying to be. And the fact that like the more you try to raise your social rating, like the more it flounders. Like I thought that was a really great observation because of the ways that technology is a really imperfect counterpart to our actual lives. And that sort of like social relevance, I guess, is like really missing in these new episodes. I also agree that Black Mirror is definitely most interesting when it's talking about like a near future, other than like a super future or a far away future where everything is supposed to work as it's designed to be.
You know, so this season was the first season that there was no episode set in the present, basically. I mean, there have been a lot of episodes like that. There was, or, you know, the very first episode with the pig, which is, I think, I mean, people don't all love it, but I think that episode's amazing and basically sort of could happen now, except that they can't find the person who's doing the blackmailing, or the Waldo effect, or even the episode last season that was really brutal, but where the kid is being blackmailed, and then at the end you find out it's, and to like do all those crimes, and he is
like a pedophile.
A pedophile, yes. Yeah. So, but all of those episodes are not set, they're set in the world now, basically. Like, and this felt like everything was just not at all set in the world now.
I mean, I think, like, you know, Archangel is like pretty the close or the closest, but yeah, no, it doesn't, you don't feel like that in this season.
I mean, part of me just thinks, I don't know, how long can a show like this reasonably go on? And is it just like diminishing returns, or like, I mean, I'm, you know, there could be a next season, I'll be like, I was all wrong. All six of those episodes are great. And it's not like every season, you know, the first two seasons of Black Mirror were only three episodes, and it's not like all three of those are always great. You know, they've often been very provocative and interesting, but there's always been some difference in quality from episode to episode. But this was the first time that I was just like, I know you have all this money. I know you can have money forever. But like, it's hard to just come up with really great ideas over and over again.
Especially with effectively like only one writer. I mean, apart from Nosedive, Charlie Brooker's written every episode of the season or every episode of the series. And that's a lot of, and as you mentioned, I mean, they're unconnected. Like, he's starting from scratch every time. And that's a lot of ideas to come up with.
Yeah.
Maybe hand over the writer's room to, or like have a writer's room. I think that would be helpful. Especially because I think one reason why there are parts of Black Museum that work for me with regard to the storyline about like the Black death row prisoner is that it is no longer taking place in like a post-racial like utopia dystopia. And I think I think if we were to explore more about like how particular technologies affect different groups of people in different ways, the show could really be more interesting in a way that like it just isn't for me right now, because it always assumes a sort of basic default character and who is sort of like going through life without a particular position in society. And if they were allowed to sort of like talk about like how technology doesn't affect everyone in the exact same way, the show could really find like a new lease on life.
I think that's astute. And they should listen to you and do that next season.
Yes.
Do it, Charlie Brooker. I know you can hear me.
So I think that's it, right, from us?
That seems to, yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please subscribe to the Slate Spoiler Special podcast feed. And if you like the show, please rate and review it in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any suggestions for movies or TV shows we should spoil, or if you have any other feedback you'd like to share, please send it to us at spoilers@slate.com. Our producer is Daniel Schrader. For Sam and Ingu, I'm Willa Paskin. Thanks for listening.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.